Welcome to the ABR podcast, where some of Australian Book Review's contributors read their articles or discuss them with ABR staff. My name is Peter Rose, and I'm the editor of ABR. If you enjoy these podcasts, think about subscribing to the magazine. Those 25 and under can do so for as little as $25 for the online version, or just $60 for print plus online.
Available in July is Swimming in Words, new and selected poems by Luke Icarus Simon. Simon's poems propel you into their sensual, visceral world, always redolent of passion. Luke Icarus Simon has been widely published in journals and anthologies since the 1980s. This is his fourth poetry collection. He writes from the perspective of an immigrant gay man documenting his lived experience. Swimming in Words comprises 70 poems, including the eponymous 4,000-word prose poem.
During the 1970s, copyright law was reshaped in Australia. After a landmark case involving writer Frank Morehouse and a photocopier at the University of New South Wales. In this week's ABR podcast, Morehouse biographer Matthew Lamb tells of his subject's battle to defend Australian authors in this test case and the founding of Copyright Agency in 1974. As Lamb explains, at the heart of the test case was the issue of authorisation. Morehouse and his co-plaintiffs argued that by providing photocopy facilities, institutions were effectively authorising individuals with access to those facilities to breach copyright. Ultimately, that argument proved successful. Here is Matthew Lamb with Copyright and Its Discontents, Frank Morehouse's Battle to Defend Authors, published in the June issue of ABR.
It is only a coincidence that my book, Frank Morehouse, Strange Paths, the first in a two-volume cultural biography of the Australian author, ends in 1974, the same year that Copyright Agency was incorporated, or that it was published in time to celebrate the 50th anniversary of this incorporation. As Morehouse himself always argued, such coincidences, chance happenings, and historical accidents are often far more important in shaping our culture than we like to concede. One limitation of conventional biography is that focusing on an individual life tends to push other individuals who shared that life into peripheral or supporting roles. One of the many reasons I was drawn to Morehouse as a biographical subject, however, was because he self-consciously rejected this individualist conceit. He always considered himself a detached observer and ironic participant in events, always working alongside other people. His fascination with committees, meetings and institutions as ways of organizing social experience, of harnessing coincidence, chance, and the accidental, informed his thinking and his writing. Nowhere is this individualist conceit more clearly demonstrated than in the public's view of Morehouse's involvement in the landmark copyright case in the early 1970s. It is usually referred to as the Morehouse case, or Morehouse versus UNSW. This elides the involvement of Morehouse's publisher, Richard Walsh and Angus and Robertson, who were co-plaintiffs. In fact, the case appearing before the Supreme Court of New South Wales in April and May 1974 was Morehouse and Angus and Robertson Publishers Proprietary Limited versus University of New South Wales. Morehouse's publisher shared the risk of paying costs if they lost the case, while Morehouse's personal indemnity was guaranteed by the Australian Society of Authors, ASA. This also points to the broader institutional background of the case, predating Morehouse's involvement. That story begins with the author Del Stuyvesant initiating the formation of the ASA in 1963. Australia was at the time in need of a new Copyright Act. It was still operating under a 1912 Act which, in 1959, the Copyright Law Review Committee, the Spicer Committee, recommended updating, but the political will was lacking. The advocacy of the ASA put copyright back on the agenda. It was Gus O'Donnell who drove the idea. A former farmer and soldier, known for always wearing a bushman's hat, Gus had joined the ASA as an author, but quickly became passionate about copyright and its discontents. He pulled together various organisations with an interest in copyright, and from 1964 until 1968, he led a successful campaign to get the federal government to develop what became the Copyright Act 1968. In January 1968, the Australian Copyright Council interim organisation was formed, It started out as basically a drawer in an office of the ASA, with Gus's chair and sole employee. Over the next few years, this expanded into a single-room office which Gus shared with two young lawyers, David Cattons and Peter Banky, whom he had hired as legal research officers. Their salaries were initially paid for by a grant from the Australia Council for the Arts, now known as Creative Australia. In that room, they were always discussing and arguing and planning. Their initial focus was on lobbying and advocacy, as well as on giving free advice to authors and copyright owners. Occasionally, Gus declared the need for a bash, where one of the three would pick a secret lunch venue, and they would spend the rest of the day there in extended conversation. The first bash Gus arranged was a picnic in Centennial Park. David once organised a boat, while Peter hired a mobile home parked near a train station. Around the same time, photocopy machines were becoming more readily available, especially in university libraries. Gus thought this created the conditions for a wholesale infringement of copyright. David investigated and wrote an opinion suggesting that universities, such as the University of New South Wales, were authorising their students to breach copyright. But this required a test case to be proven before the courts. And so, on Friday, 28th September 1973, Paul Brennan, a young journalist and graduate of UNSW, entered the photocopy room in the library at his alma mater and made two copies of various stories from the library copy of Morehouse's The American's Baby. It was important that Morehouse didn't know in advance what had happened to ensure he hadn't licensed the copying of his book. But what is not widely appreciated is that Morehouse had spent the decade prior researching and thinking about media communications technology. This included, in May 1973, a series of lectures on the implications of new communications technologies, including photocopying and other forms of photo transmission. So, when Morehouse was called into a meeting with Gus, David and Peter, soon after his book had been copied, and told about the breach and the strategy of the test case, he didn't need much convincing to come on board. At the heart of the test case was the issue of authorization, to establish that, by providing photocopy facilities, institutions were effectively authorizing individuals with access to those facilities to breach copyright. George Masterman, QC, and Robert Holm appeared for Morehouse and Angus and Robertson. They did so pro bono. Peter and David spent many hours each week working on the case, researching the law of authorization and its overseas equivalents. They were, in effect, juniors helping counsel. This also necessitated many meetings over drinks with Morehouse, as well as the occasional bash. But the initial case was not an unambiguous win. It was found that the university had not authorized the particular breach by Brennan, but that generally it had authorized such breaches as occurred by the photocopying of the whole or part of the library copy of said book. In June 1974, the University of New South Wales appealed the second order against the general breach, while Morehouse and Angus and Robertson cross-appealed the first order regarding Brennan's particular breach. That same month, Copyright Agency Limited, the proposed organisation to negotiate, collect and distribute copyright fees associated with copying, was incorporated. In August 1975, the High Court of Australia upheld the appeal of UNSW regarding the general breach. Significantly, they also upheld the cross-appeal, confirming that, the American's Baby having been copied, UNSW had indeed authorised a particular breach. This decision provided the necessary leverage for the Copyright Council to begin to develop, within the framework of Copyright Agency, a practical licensing scheme to ensure that copyright holders in Australia were fairly remunerated for the distribution, copying and dissemination of their work. The case gave David and Peter an international profile, and this was one of the first successful cases in the world holding an educational institution liable for copying done by its staff and students. This proved to be the beginning of successful law careers in private practice. Morehouse would come to refer to them as the Starsky and Hutch of copyright after the 1970s American Cop Show. Gus worked for the Copyright Council part-time. Along with his continued involvement with the ASA, his advocacy work took time and energy away from his own writing. Like Gus, Morehouse also joined the cause because he was a writer. However, the immediate case didn't seem to diminish his enormous capacity for juggling various projects. While working on the case, which he did voluntarily and without remuneration, he was also in the process of writing his third book and producing his first feature film. But he did become far more involved in the area of authors' rights and for far longer than he predicted when he was first approached to become involved in the test case. For more than the next decade, Morehouse took on leadership roles in both the Australian Society of Authors and the Copyright Council, and all the meetings, committees, and negotiations between institutions that this involved, to ensure Copyright Agency was established on a firm foundation. When he took over as chair of the Copyright Council on Gus's retirement after 17 years, he referred to Gus as our professor, professor to the copyright community. Morehouse's involvement did take time and energy from his writing projects. The gaps between his publications began to widen in the 1980s, and several works were unfinished. He never complained, for he considered the work he was doing, along with many others, as something bigger and more important, a legacy. And it is a legacy writ large that continues in the form of Copyright Agency and in its Cultural Fund's commitment to support creators and organisations such as the Australian Book Review in addressing contemporary challenges. It is a legacy expressed also in its Frank Morehouse Fellowship for Young Writers, which helps emerging writers to create new work.
Thanks for listening to the Australian Book Review podcast. Join us again next week. If you enjoyed this episode, why not consider subscribing to ABR? Subscriptions start from just $10 a month for full digital access. Visit our website for more information. We'd like to thank Stacey Chan, who edits the podcast, as well as our contributors who take the time to read their articles and creative writing. And if you enjoy listening to the ABR podcast, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes.